to another episode of Everything is Canon, the Cinelens podcast. I'm your host, Steve Duncan. However, if you've found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If you want to reach me, there are several ways to do so, but the easiest way is to email me at steve@cinelinks.com, or you can always find me on Twitter at stevedunk5 or at everythingcanon. Today in the show, I'm talking to Akemi Don Bowman all about her brand new book, the first in a series, The Wonderful The Infinity Courts. Ever think about robots and if they have feelings? What about artificial intelligence? Do you think just because a machine can talk that it is deserving of our sympathy? And I don't mean calculators, I mean Siri, Alexa, Sherpa, and the other virtual assistants. Do you ever find yourself, quote, considering them at all? Ominous singularity forecasting aside, The Infinity Courts is full of fun contemporary riffs, including enough pop culture references to shake a lightsaber at. And as lead characters go, Nami is sympathetic, strong-willed, and courageous, all the things you want in a main character. We talk about the sometimes downside of interacting with fans online and how much access do you allow, how much the two of us have in common, including our fear of artificial intelligence, The Infinity Courts, of course, and much, much more. While this is a spoiler-free discussion mostly, the odd minor detail may slip out. So if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled at all, better stop listening now, but definitely double back after you've read it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. As you know, on this podcast, we encourage supporting authors and stories that affirm the lives of people other than ourselves. Each time we either engage in a conversation, whether it be online or face-to-face, if we ever do that again, or each time we participate in the market with our purchasing choices. And it's important that we do that every day of the year. So today is super awesome for three reasons, and I'll state them in order of importance, starting with the least important. It's my birthday. It's International Women's Day. And lastly, and most importantly, I get to talk to Akemi Don Bowman, a critically acclaimed author whose novels have received multiple accolades and award nominations, including her incredible debut novel, 2018 Starfish, which was a William C. Morris Award finalist, actually, and probably would have won if not for a little unknown book called The Hate U Give. Either way, it is a big deal to receive that honor, and it was well-deserved. She's here today to talk about her new book, though, The Infinity Court, which is described as Westworld meets Warcross in this high-stakes, incisive, dizzyingly smart sci-fi about a teen girl navigating an afterlife in which she must defeat an AI entity intent on destroying humanity. Please welcome to the show Akemi Don Bowman. Hi, Akemi.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, and happy birthday. I didn't know it was your birthday.
I'm not one of these people, like, I took it off, like, social media and stuff, because I don't really care. But I do like that, you know, that it's the same day as International Women's Day. And I do, you know, I'll bring it up now and again, but I'm not one of these, like, I wasn't fishing for that, but thank you. thanks so much for doing this. So the reason I placed you ahead of International Women's Day, the important day that it is because you are, in fact, a woman. A powerful one at that. And without women, then there wouldn't be no International Women's Day, right? So I'm spending the day talking to women. I also, tell me if you agree or not. How could you not agree with this? I don't subscribe to this sort of like calendar celebration for points game. You know what I mean? We should do it all year. It's great when they can do it and bring attention to certain issues, but you know, Black History Month just passed, and it's great. You know, they see these sales spike in February, but then the other 11 months of the year, they go back toward that 11%. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's why I placed you ahead of that day, because it's more important that I talk to women than celebrate International Women's Day all year long. That's sort of my point.
Yeah, that's cool. I agree with that. Yeah. And it's a good, it's good to have the calendar days, because I feel like it's always good to help boost, you know, artists and stuff like that.
100%.
And if there's any extra way to do it, then I'm all for it. But yeah, there's a lot of calendar days. I think sometimes it's a bit lost. But
yeah, and it's always disappointing, you know, because you want, like you said, it's good to bring attention to some ideas, but then it really fucking sucks when, like, the next day it's like it never happened, kind of.
Yeah, I think there's some people who use it kind of as a trend, and it's like, sometimes, you know, your lived experience isn't necessarily a trend that you can turn into, like, you know, some kind of like graphic or something to share for like a week. Sometimes it feels like, how much do you actually care, and how much are you just posting that for, you know,
right? And like
brownie points, you know?
Right, but, absolutely. Yeah. And then, like, because, like, I saw this IP post something today, and they were posting, you know, in honor of International Women's Day, you know, and they posted a fictional character, which is fine, a piece of art of this fictional character, and they posted sort of like a script from a book that celebrates women in this IP, and they didn't acknowledge the two women who not only drew the art but wrote the words. Just like,
right, yeah,
it's kind of like you're it's like you're almost there. You know?
Yeah,
like you're yeah, so, just
slightly
you're so,
missing.
But... you're so yeah. close.
Yeah,
yeah. So it's stuff like that. I'm just like, meh. Anyways. So it's like, yeah, is it just a hashtag thing? I don't know. Whatever. Anyways,
yeah.
I listen. No one's perfect. Whatever anyone out there does is the best. If that's the best you can do, then that's great. The point is that we all try and do something. Yeah. So I was looking at some of the finer points in your bio, and not that we're both on dating apps. We're both deeply committed to our partners. I'm just assuming you are. Maybe I don't. You're like, actually, no. We'd be matched up on some dating app for sure. So I am half Scottish. You live in Scotland.
Oh, cool.
Yep. On my dad's side. You have No Face, Spirited Away is your avatar pic on Twitter. It's maybe my favorite movie of all time. I'm a vegan. I think you're a vegetarian, I think.
Yeah, yep.
Okay. And we both love Star Wars. Right? Is that true?
Yeah.
Yes.
Are we best friends? I feel like we're now best friends.
and we also both love animals. You had a funny thing in your bio, but you're allergic to most of them, which is too bad. I'm not allergic to any animals, which is wonderful, or vegetables, which is also great as a vegan. So yeah, it was just like, I was reading, you know, doing my due diligence, my research, and reading your bio there. And it's like, yeah, these are all great, awesome things. And I'm like, because that's what I am, right? So I'm all these awesome things too. So anyways, yeah, we'd be like matched up and then...
well, that's so funny. Yeah. And I do love animals too. And I am allergic, and that makes me so mad. I am the first awful. Thing, like when I moved out of my parents' house and I had like, you know, my own place and stuff. And the first thing I did, I was like, I am getting a dog. I don't even care. And I did. And they made my allergies go like all wacky for like 6 months. I couldn't even breathe. And I was determined. I was like, I am going to get through this. And then one day I woke up and I built up an immunity to my dog only. And so that's just how I've been living. So whenever I have a pet, I just build up a tolerance and it seems to work okay.
Isn't that funny? But, and it wasn't even like one of those like sort of like non-allergenic dogs or anything, or
no, it was a husky.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So is that any husky or just your husky?
It was just my husky at the time. They're not here anymore, but yeah, at the time. But yeah, I think in the future I probably will stick to hypoallergenic dogs, because it's not pleasant not being able to breathe for that long. But
that'd be awful. And I mean, I know there's like medications and stuff you can take, but I don't know if you want to live your life like that either. But
they didn't work. I used to try them and none of it worked. And then just like one day, I think my body just got fed up. And that's probably obviously not a science thing, because I'm sure some scientists are probably like, what are you talking about? That is not how that works. But for me it did.
Right. It's more magic. Yeah, it was meant to be.
Yeah.
I have two dogs, and I've always had dogs. Yeah, I couldn't I just love them so much.
What kind of dogs do you have?
I've got a blue heeler and a beagle.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, so two weird rescues. I've only ever had rescues, I'm not like, oh, I have rescues, I'm so cool. It's just like, I used to be an investigator for the Humane Society years ago. That was my previous life. And so it's just like, once you see that side of that business, you could only ever adopt ever again, because you just see, you know, you look into their eyes every day, you could never go to a traditional breeder ever again after that. There's just no way I could, knowing they're all out there, right? So
I
encourage people to do that if they can. It's not always easy, but encourage it. And get your animals spayed or neutered. All of a sudden we're like Price is Right. I don't know where this came from, but again, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. It's like 8 o'clock there.
Yeah,
it's nighttime in Scotland. Hey, did you watch the Oprah, Meghan and Harry thing online, or are you waiting for today?
I saw clips of it. It's everybody crazy. Over here is like raging. I mean, not everybody. I hope there's like nicer people, but the press anyway are like raging. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
So you live in Scotland. Is your partner British?
Yeah, he's British. Yeah, he's he was born and raised around Newcastle, but he's lived in Scotland like twice as long as me, and I've been here for like 10 years. So
oh, right on.
Yeah. Oh, I'm dating him. He's gonna be like, you're telling my age on.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Well, I'm four. Yeah. I'm turning 45 today. I'm not an age. No ageism around the show. I'm old too. But is he like? Is it as a big deal where you guys are as they're making it seem like, or
For the Meghan and Harry thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
On the news it is. We have a certain somebody who has, he's on the news and he's always talking. He used to be on talent show and he's very loud and has a lot of opinions.
Mr. Morgan.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. He's been making waves on this side of the ocean too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mad at him, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's different. He's different. That guy.
Yeah.
I just see that people like him and I'm just like, he must be exhausted. It's gotta be tiring being that like just angry or opinionated all the time. I don't know. It's so unappealing. It's so unattractive to me. You know what I mean? Like people like that are just ugly to me just as people. Right. Like, I don't know. It's just,
yeah. And like, I don't want to be like saying anything bad. I always have like this thing of like, you don't know what people are going through. And the last thing, like, I don't want to say something and hurt somebody's feelings. But I don't think one, that his feelings would probably, maybe he doesn't actually care. I'm sure he doesn't care. But two, like, sometimes I do wonder if like, I don't always trust, I feel like, what people say. I don't know if this is like a persona that, which is still doesn't make it better. You know what I mean? But I don't know like how much of it, like, does he genuinely believe everything that he's saying? Or is he just doing this for like shock value? And I don't know.
For his brand, the character Piers Morgan. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's hard to say. I don't know. He's like,
cause it does seem real out there. Like some of the stuff. And it's just like, I don't know how you can say what you're saying with that much conviction.
Right. Like, and he knows. And first of all, like, how could he have a friend? Cause you know, like, which friend is going to be like, it seems like a guy, I'm going to spend my time with him. And, mm-hmm. And also he's saying it knowing a reaction is coming.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. So what, you know, like you said, who knows what he's got going on in his real life. Yeah. He's been doing it for so long. I'm just sort of like, you know, if it was all just a sort of a show, I would have think he would have given up the gig by now, but pays well, obviously. So.
Yeah. But I like Harry and Meghan. I think that, you know, like, I mean, I don't have huge opinions on this kind of stuff, but I feel like, you know, if we're talking about it, I feel like, you know, the media really, really was unkind to her for a long time. And the difference between her and other royals was just like night and day. And honestly, I feel like anybody, any rational person or even, irrational, like you can only be pushed to your limits for so long. And if you have like, you know, people who are your family, because this is not just like a thing to them. This is like their actual family, you know? Yeah. It's like if your family is saying that kind of stuff and like letting that stuff go on in the media for so long and did not protect you or stand up for you, like at some point you probably do feel like you just want to say the truth, you know? So I'm not going to fault somebody for giving an interview. Like, this is their lives. So
yeah. I'm Canadian, like I'm supposed to care, but I just don't like.
Yeah, but I'm not that invested. I'm just like,
No. I like it's like I'm. I watched it last night. Like I'm. You know, I'm definitely. You know, like it's. I won't say it's a spectacle because it is. We forget. You're right. It is a family thing going on, and it's aired.
Yeah.
But I just meant like, you know, as a, you know, because I'm part of the Commonwealth. I'm, you know, Canadians. Like, there's a lot of people in Canada who just like love the royal family, right? And I'm.
Oh, dude.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, big time. And I'm just like, you know, they're assholes, like, like, you know, but just to put a real quick pin in this, because I don't want to waste our time talking about it, but I brought it up. To your point, like during the interview there, they're holding up like sort of side by side stories about Kate and Meghan, right? Like, and you know, the difference is obvious. Like Kate was like, she's eating avocados and it's a beautiful, healthy way to raise, you know, to nurture her baby in her womb. And then like Megan's even got avocados and they got them from deforested lands and oppressed people. And it's just like, it's so obvious. And they did it with
their, they did it with their like bumps too. Like when Kate was like holding her pup, they're like, oh, look how tender and loving of a mother she is. And then when Meghan did it, they're like, she's so vain. And
yes.
It's like, are you kidding? Sometimes, to be fair, because I was pregnant twice, right? Sometimes it just hurts and you're giving it support. Like sometimes you have to, because it's like painful. Like leave her alone.
That's like something we just got to stay out. Like if you're a man, certainly for sure a man, stay out of it. But even if you're like, if you've never had a child, you just shut the fuck up. Like you have no,
it's just a weird thing to jump into. Like,
yeah.
All the things in the world you can have an opinion about, like you're going to have an opinion about the way somebody like holds their baby bump. Like, I don't understand. Like,
right. It's just so like, it's just so obvious how they're treating her. But anyway,
yeah.
Let's talk about, cooler things like books and stuff. although I do want to get something a little more serious with you but we'll soften you up with this one. You're more than a few books in now in your wonderful career. Just so I was sort of curious, where you're at with your career these days? Like when you set out, did you have a goal in mind and did you hit those goals? Like how are you feeling these days? You got another book coming out and you know, your resume is getting long.
Yeah, it still feels really bizarre to me. I think like I'll be honest, I the first time I wrote a book and I was like, oh, I'll see if I can get an agent. And you know, it took me four books before I, you know, found an agent. And then it was the fifth one that actually sold. And I think every single time, I think somewhere in the back of my head, like I never expected anybody to actually like it. I think I just was maybe a little bit hoping that somebody might one day. And so I feel like I'm just continually like surprised. Like whenever something happens, I'm like, oh my God, it really happened. So which is kind of like a nice way, because I feel like I'm still just as excited for stuff as I was from the beginning. And I hope that kind of never goes away, because maybe that'd be kind of sad if it did. But
There's certain aspects that are going to like feel like a job more than others, right? Like, and so I don't, you know, every author seems to be different. Most of them hate outlining, for example, or, you know, like world building is laborious for some. Is there any part of it that feels that way for you? Of the process?
At the moment, it's honestly the drafting stage is killing me right now. And that's a lot to do with, I mean, everybody I think has been in a weird headspace with the pandemic and stuff. Sure. And I think it's been difficult, and people who are having to work from home, who've got kids and stuff, it's just been a lot. And so at the moment, I'm just trying to figure out a way to draft that is like a more reasonable schedule. Cause I feel like sometimes I'm just working for like 13, 14 hour days. And it's just ridiculous. It's just a while. I don't know how it's been for you for like working, but it just feels like a lot.
I'll bet. And you know, this is why, you know, I've mentioned this too over the past 12 months, talking to so many authors, you know, and it'll be interesting to see what stories sort of are birthed from this past 12 months, right? Are they hopeful stories? Are they despair? Are they, you know what I mean? Like,
I feel like there'll be a lot of fantasy, but like escapism.
right. And that's, and then I've talked to authors who are like, I, you know, can't imagine sort of like starting a story during this time, because some people have had it really hard, like you, to your point, have a hard time finding that creative energy to even just sit down in front of a screen and type anything at all. So
yeah, I read somewhere somebody called it like they called it like a creative workflow. And so, and I mean, I think everybody probably understands the concept from a basic point of view, but for me, I always like say it's like a snowball effect. So like usually the first day to sit down, if I haven't written anything and I just sit down, right, that I usually don't write anything that first day. That's more just like thinking about what I'm trying to do. And it takes like a good 4 or 5 days to get into a place where I'm actually knocking out more than 1,000 words. Right. And then after that, as long as I do it every day, I can keep up with it. But as soon as you have like any kind of time off, like for me, it just throws me and it's really hard to get back. So to try to get into this like space of not having time every day, and I'm just scattered like here, days here. It's been tough.
So if you were, you know, once you got to that point, like you said, where you were doing, you know, at least 1,000 a day, what's the longest you would take a break then, do you think? Like if someone says, oh, let's say your husband says, oh, we need to go away for 4 days. Would you be like, no?
Yeah, he would not. He's not going to be happy about better. That. But I'm like, do not interrupt me. Like, don't knock on the door for anything. Like, right. I just need to be working, because I know that I'll run out of steam. I'm like burn bright and burn fast kind of person. Sure. And so I need that time to just get it knocked out and then I'm done.
Right on.
But then I'm also equally happy if I've got no work on, I'm happy to just like chill in the same extreme kind of way. That's fun with me too. So
it's probably good to get once in a while to get away, and not for a week, but even just for half a day to get away, step away from it probably too, right?
Yeah, or I will be once all this is over. I feel like somebody said something somebody got vaccinated, somebody that I know, and they were like, just casually like, oh, I've got my eye appointment, then I'm going to Target. And like my heart just like, I was like, oh, like, what? You can just go to Target? Like it's nothing? Like I've just been locked in my house for like a year.
It's going to be, we're getting to that transition spot now, right? Where vaccines are going out and things are going to start to reopen. And like one of my, you know, my three favorite things are conventions, concerts, and movies. So it's like, I'm pretty much screwed. But, you know, we were talking about it the other day with somebody, you know, being at a concert, especially like those would be the last things to come back, obviously. Right.
Yeah. I wonder how weird it's going to be if people are going to be like, you know, keeping more of a space than usual. I'm like, you know,
how can you go in some cases, right? Like,
you know, and on a plane too, like, what are you going to do?
I don't know, man. You're giving me anxiety.
I know. Somebody over here, they've been talking about it. And they're like, I think that people will just keep wearing masks in clothes. Like, I wonder on planes. Like,
I think you're going to see masks forever for some people, for sure.
Yeah. And they've been doing it in other countries. So, I mean, it's not
And especially now that people know it's not like a big deal. I mean, to wear it, you know, if you have to wear it once in a while when you're around people. But I don't know. Okay. So, as someone who does sort of struggle in some ways myself, your admission on Twitter a week or so ago, I thought was really moving and really beautiful. Since I could never do something like that, I'm going to throw courageous in there as well. And I don't, I'm not going to talk about the specifics at all for fear of making this discussion too dour. And frankly, it's none of my business as well. So, you know, I'm not asking you to comment on what you said specifically, but one thing that kind of was up came about a month or two ago, which I thought was really interesting. And I think it's relevant. It's, you know, because of social media, we have this sort of scary amount of access to people, right? Strangers, essentially. This idea that, you know, because you put some of yourself into a story, into your characters, that a reader is entitled to know everything about you, yourself, right? Those experiences encompass all that you are, and you should be judged squarely on this piece of fiction, right? Which is, of course, bullshit. Like, I'm Twitter friends with a lot of authors, but I would never show up to their fucking house, right? Or, you know, like, ask them personal questions without permission, certainly. And I also wouldn't assume they want me to know anything more than what's already out there or on the page. So that, you know, that thread you posted sort of gets to some of that. What's your opinion just on that in general? Because you've been a writer now for a while and a professional writer. And on social media, and you took a break, like you said, and what's your opinion on sort of that? Because I thought it was a really interesting discussion that you started, and it's one that's comes up now and again.
Yeah. I think obviously it's very personal to me because I had a bad experience with it. And I would not wish that on anybody, but I think that, you know, there's a lot of really important discussions that are going on right now, you know, in this recent years and stuff. And it's some of them, I would say even maybe most of them are very important. Like the root of them, the context of them, it is important. And it's, you know, we're in a very, I think, we're learning at a faster rate than maybe most people did like 10 years ago. You know what I mean? And so everybody's kind of getting re-educated on stuff and maybe educated for the first time. And so that stuff's very important, but I think it's kind of giving a certain maybe percentage of people. I think maybe they have become a bit entitled about feeling like they want to be, I'm trying to like word this. They want to know that you have permission to write something, you know what I mean? Cause it's almost like they've made themselves the gatekeepers in a certain way. And I think that that's kind of, not always the safest or healthiest way to be. And especially for like creatives who maybe don't always want to share stuff. And I think, you know, when I first started out, this was 2017, my first book got published, and I did not have like a mentor or somebody who like, you know, took me under their wing and was like, you know, you don't owe anybody this. I just sort of saw the noise and thought that I had to like respond to stuff. And so, you know, my book, you know, was written about abuse and things like that. And when people started kind of wanting to know if I had permission to write it, I guess is the easiest way to put that. And I felt like I had to then say like, oh, well, here's all the things that have happened to me, and this is why I'm writing from my own experience. And then it just sort of flipped. And then it became a thing of like, how can we weaponize this against this person? And it just turned very ugly very fast. And I would honestly stress to so many new writers and creatives, like, you do not owe anybody anything. Like, you really, really don't. This kind of stuff, if it's personal to you, like, just because you wrote about it, you don't have to say, okay, I wrote it and this is, you know, I have permission to write this. And like, yes, there's, you know, the conversations that are important, like I said, where you want to make sure that people are speaking from an educated point of view. You know what I mean? I'm not one of those people who are going to say like, oh, you can only write about your own experiences. I'm not going to say that because I don't necessarily, I think there's more like nuance to that. I don't think it's a black and white thing. But I'll also say that, you know, if you look at the percentage of who's getting published and stuff, you know, I think that, you know, everybody should probably be a little bit conscious about, you know, how many books are being written by, you know, Asian people or, you know, Black people or whatever the case may be, you know, and kind of think, am I taking a spot, you know, am I telling a story that, you know, that somebody else is not even getting the chance to tell their own story? And am I taking that spot? Those are all important things, right? But when it comes to like, I don't know, trying to police, I guess, like lived experience, I just feel like I feel like it crosses a line sometimes. And I don't think it's right. And I think it's not from the side of it that, you know, I was on the other side of it, it does not feel good. And I worry about, you know, young writers like coming into this and having those kind of experiences and like how easy it would be to just like feel like, I don't that you were like shut down or silenced and that you maybe wouldn't want to write again. Cause I mean, there was like a little brief thing that I thought like, do I even want to keep going with this? Cause this was like really, I mean, it was traumatizing for me personally, just to have that. I wasn't used to that. You know, authors aren't media trained, at least, you know, the majority of us, maybe the top people are, I'm not sure, but you know, nobody's like sitting there with like a earpiece being like, okay, say this and, you know, don't talk about this and don't say this. You just are sort of, I don't know, like in the deep end, just like floundering. And yeah, so I just feel like, you know, you just really don't owe people anything online. You know, at the end of the day, like you're living your life and these are strangers. These are people that you don't know. And like, yes, they can say whatever they want to, but you can't actually control that. Like, even if they're wrong and even when it sucks, you know what I mean? It's like your headspace is way more important and just kind of like protecting your boundaries and saying like, look, this is what I'm willing to share and this is what I'm not. And that's okay. And just have that be separate.
Great answer. And, you know, so much, we've learned so much about this the past year or two, right? About, you know, whether it's own voices and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely instances where there's way too many people, white people, speaking out of turn, especially when it comes to things like race and gender, right? Mm-hmm. But as far as like non-race, non-gender, you know, issues, especially characteristics when it comes to characters in your story, you know, this idea, this presumption that people, that you, like, again, to your point, that you owe these people anything. Like, if, you know, if some, you know, somebody says to you, oh, well, how much of you is in this character or whatever, or that character, or whatever, you know, your answer should be some of it, all of it, none of it, fuck off. Like, you know, like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's none of your business. Like, but, you know, bugger off. Like, and, you know, yeah. Stay in your space for sure and write what you know. But like, you know, if people only write what they experienced, I mean, God, there'd be a lot less books in the world, number one, but you know, like there'd be no, there'd be no fantasy books, right? There'd be no science fiction books. There'd be no anything, but think of all the romance books we wouldn't have. People only wrote what they know.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah. And that's, you know, just again, to your point, it was a perfect answer you gave. And I think that's really great advice too, to just, you know, you don't owe, it's not even just online. You don't owe anybody anything, do you?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, like, it is true. And it's, yeah, it's hard sometimes for me to even like keep that in my brain, because I'm the kind of person who is terrified of upsetting anybody. And like, all I just want people to do is like be happy and not be mad at me. And that's like at my core, like where it comes from. And that probably stems from my childhood. You know what I mean? And so like the even thought that I might be upsetting somebody, or, you know, that they might've taken something I said the wrong way and I can't explain it. I mean, it is, that kicks off my anxiety. But at the end of the day, you just have to be like, look, I can't control that stuff. I really can't. Like, as much as, you know, I don't want to upset somebody, and I'll do my very best not to, you know, at the end of the day too, like, you know, you've got to protect your heart too.
Absolutely. And I mean, like, but I think that's almost everybody. Like, I'm like that for sure. Like, unless you're like a sociopath or an anarchist, nobody wants people to dislike them generally. You know what I mean? Of course not. That I think that's a very natural thing. But how, you know, you're in a unique, it's how you deal with that, obviously, is what's important and what gives you character. It's just you've chosen a career where you just, you know, you open yourself up to, you have fans, you have, there are, you know what I mean? Like, you're a public, living sort of a public life in a way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think with writers too, it's like slightly different. And I don't know, like, there's so many people obviously in a team behind a book, right? But I think like with the writer, it's like them, it's their name. So it's like any kind of criticisms is like, it becomes sometimes, some people are great and some reviewers, like, you know, they understand what reviewing a book is. But some of them, I feel like they just like look at the author and just assume that every single thing that they say in the book is what they actually feel in their own life.
That's
not even always true. Like, I can't write every single character to be exactly like me. That would be, first of all, super boring, because I'm like really dull, but you know what I mean? Like, you want variety. And so every book you write is going to have different people in it. And it doesn't mean you agree with everything that character does. You're just telling a story, you know?
Well, it's also, it's like, you know, what is there? There's probably some dummy out there that's going to be being like, well, unless you yourself, Akemi, has been, you know, shot in a gas station, then I don't see how you have any right to write about NAMI. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's wacky, but
I think there's a lot more context to it. And that's why I just feel like, you know, some people don't understand that.
Absolutely. I guess the nice thing is too, with as an author, you have this sort of like anonymity that you can lean on too, right? Like, you're not, I guess, like a, you know, some actor who can't even walk down the street or whatever without being recognized. Mm-hmm. I guess you have that sort of that shield, that protection ray. But this thing though, and I know there's pressure too for authors to engage on social media, right, to help promote and sell and push books and stuff. And it's, I mean, Twitter's a hellscape on the best of days, right? So it is,
and it's an echo chamber as well. And I think sometimes, like, you don't really realize that. Like, it took me a long time to see that, because I would just see the noise, and I just, like, I don't know. I guess it's just the human brain, maybe assuming that that's what everybody's saying because that's what you're seeing.
Yeah.
But it's actually not. It's like a very small percentage. Did you watch that Netflix special that had, like, it was all about the AI technology and stuff?
Yep.
And they were talking about social media, and that, like, totally changed, like, the way that I thought about it. Cause I was like, yeah, I was like, my computer is basically tricking me into thinking that this is what everybody's thinking. it's just like a small,
I mean, that's, I'm going to, actually talking to SB Divya later this week about Machinehood, this great book she just released. It's all about artificial intelligence and sentience and stuff. And it's, you know, I'm like, we're screwed. You know what I mean? And I was talking to her quickly on email, and I was just like, I'm relying on you to convince me that we're not screwed. Cause she's studied machine intelligence. She's an engineer. And, so I'm like, can't wait to get, like, I need her to inject some hope into me. Cause I'm like, once the singularity hits, we're just bags of water, and they're going to get rid of us. Like, right away.
Yeah. I'm concerned
if they don't torture us first, right? Yeah. Like, for fun, like whoever invents general artificial intelligence first, like, who, I don't know what type of values that person has, right? I mean, they could...
Yeah, exactly.
If a sociopath invents AGI first, we're done, right? I mean, so...
Yeah. Anyway. I've caught myself, like, do you know how, like, I don't know if it's always done this, but this is the first time I've noticed it, but, like, when I'm typing an email, it predicts what you're going to say. So if you start, like, typing something, and it's like guessing, like, the whole, not just a word, like the whole sentence, and I've, like, caught myself, like, changing what I was gonna say just to be like, no, I'm not gonna you got it right, but now I'm changing my mind on principle.
We're not at Skynet yet. I always tell, I'm old enough too, so I get to say this, I'm like, you know, back in 1994 when Windows first sort of started, and the very first user agreement we all clicked, that's, you know, that was the end of it, right? We signed over our everything at that point. So we've been screwed for a while. But artificial intelligence is obviously a big part of the Infinity Courts. So the summary is kind of longish. I don't really want to read it. And you're going to get asked this question so many times. So you're going to get to practice your answer, I guess.
So, oh my gosh. Elevator, I know. Pitch.
Yeah. Right. Hey, listen, yeah. You're an old hat at this. So, you know, you're going to get asked this question a million more times if you haven't been asked a million already. So,
what the elevator pitches are the worst too, because I always just picture, like, my agent or my editor, like, listening to it and then being like, what are you talking about?
we spent money on this promotional language and you're not using it.
Yeah.
I can read it if you want. That's fine.
I'll go for it. I'll try. All right. I should practice, I guess.
Infinity Courts, go.
Yeah, so the Infinity Courts is about a girl named Nami who is on her way to a party and she's murdered. And when she wakes up, she realizes she's in this afterlife called Infinity, and an AI has basically taken over and is posing as a queen and enslaving the human race. And she has to team up with some rebels to try to take her down. Is basically
that's a really good
I was calling it Terminator meets Downton Abbey for a long time. That's how I was pitching it at the start.
Beautiful, I love it. This world, it's contemporary story basically, and so Nami's world, you know, they have Ophelia instead of Siri basically, or what's another one? I don't even know.
Alexa
or something like that. So they've got Ophelia, and so she's got a cool watch, her Google watch or whatever, and you know, she, like everybody else, depends on Ophelia for a lot, right, in her life, and even sort of, you know, leans on Ophelia, like spills her deepest, darkest secrets to Ophelia, right, in a lot of instances. So she's developed a like a personal relationship with this watch, right? Mm-hmm. And it's funny because one of the things that, you know, she does in this book, and you wrote it, so you would know, but I do this all the time anyway. So like I ever think about, I always like view machines and robots as having feelings. I've just done that since I was a kid. Probably because I was raised, you know, reading Star Wars and, you know, raised in that science fiction era, right? So mm-hmm. I've always, always, you know, given robots the benefit of the doubt. So you know what I mean? So did you ever find yourself doing that growing, you know, are you like that as well? Like, do you ever consider machines? Because I've always done it, always.
Yeah. Definitely all the time. Like yeah. I also like Toy Story came out when I was like a kid as well. And it was like, even before that came out, that's how I used to feel about toys. Like if I was like sleeping and a toy fell out of my bed, I would be emotionally distraught in the morning. Cause I'd be like, I swear I didn't abandon you on purpose. Like it would really affect me. And so as I've gotten older, it's just been the same with, yeah, any kind of computer stuff. I'm always like, how do you know if they're not thinking something extra? Like,
right.
But I realize, yeah, that's maybe not the case based on programming, but I just feel like you know, anthropomorphize or whatever. Like everything.
Yeah. Well, that's like, you know, this is one of those things where like these pie in the sky sort of fantasy type things, you know, as technology is exponentially getting crazier. Like these are the discussions at AI think tanks around the world right now. Right. Like it's not if, it's when, and you know, some of these things aren't that far away anymore. So like, you know, you don't have to be a pothead to have a conversation about, you know, machines having feelings and, you know, should we consider, you know, these feelings. Infinity Quartz is, I don't know, is it like a doomsday type of thing? I guess it's like, it's almost like it's a warning, isn't it? In a lot of ways. It's
yeah,
like,
I guess it could be.
It could be, right? Because, yeah. You know, if we don't consider their feelings, we're kind of in for it, aren't we?
Yeah.
Right? And Ophelia's kind of pissed and, you know, what was the idea with this whole concept of, you know, there's this whole other realm that we don't consider and we've committed the sin of non-consideration, I guess. Is that, I don't even know if that's a word. Where did this idea come from? What's the seed here?
Yeah. Well, I think I've always had, like, I've always wanted to combine sort of like my loves of like, you know, superpowers, robots, Jane Austen. So as I always, that was always in the back of my head that I wanted to write something that was sort of like a sci-fi fantasy mashup. But I remember reading, and I don't even remember, I don't know who said it, but I just know that they were a fairly prominent scientist whenever they wrote it. But they were talking about how people put so much importance on their physical body. And they were basically, they had this theory and they were saying that what if the human body was actually just like the shell of a computer and the consciousness was like the important part. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, so when your physical shell breaks down or dies because it's old, like that consciousness needs somewhere else to go. And they were saying, like, what if that is the afterlife, is like where consciousness goes? And that really stuck with me. And I thought, like, oh yeah, that's a really cool, that kind of makes sense, like from a logical point of view. And then I was like, well, what if you had artificial consciousness? Like, what if they figured out how to hack into the place that everybody else was going? And like, what would it be like then if they were like basically on the same playing field, really? And so, yeah, that was kind of the seed, I guess.
It's a weird mix of like theism and I'm an atheist. So it's like blasphemy in a way, right? Life after death. But, but because it's like, you know, it's technology based, it's kind of based right in that
yeah.
sort of idea. So it's like, I'm good with it, just so you know. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Is that sort of like, what are your views on stuff like that? Any theological late at night?
Yeah, I think mine is very, my family was fairly, I say they were religious, but honestly, I feel like they were religious when it was like convenient. I feel like
when there was a storm.
I have family members that definitely on Sundays, and then as long as they ask for forgiveness by Saturday, they're good.
It was
a very relaxed. Yeah. And so I was kind of like brought up that way, but not super strict. So me personally, I feel like I'm not going to knock anybody's religion because who the heck do I know, like, what's going to happen, right?
Right?
And I feel like, for all I know, everybody's a little bit right and a little bit wrong, you know? And
sure.
So I kind of have a very, I guess, like open-minded, like, you know, I'm open to that. We don't know exactly what it is, but maybe there's something. And so that's kind of how I am about it. But I do like to think that you know, I think it's hard for like a lot of people to get your brain around the fact that like, if it just turns black when you die, like that kind of, that makes me start to be like, that's terrifying. That's so grim, isn't it? To be like, is that just it? Like you just close your eyes one day and then like nothing. And then it's like, I'd rather just like to imagine a fantasy world that your brain goes to. And then, you know.
Well, the best part is you won't know though.
Yeah, that's true. But then I've had the thought, like, what if you do know? What if it's just like an eternity of nothing?
Well, now
like, that's grim.
Now, yeah, well, that's where the the humanist side of me comes out, where I'm like, you know, that brain augmentation thing sounds interesting. Live forever. So this concept is interesting because if you start with that base that this place exists, right? So you don't get over yourself and you know, the human arrogance of whatever you think is out there, right? Like I have my views, you've got your views, but you know, it's not why we read books, right? So this space exists and people find themselves there for all different types of reasons, obviously, right? Because we all die for different types of reasons. Mm-hmm. Nami's path is particularly violent. You know, she gets murdered on at a gas station on her way, or just a convenience store on her way to a party. And one of the things that I really loved about your book with her in particular was she takes a lot of time to deal with that trauma. Even though she's thrust into this, so she's like juggling multiple balls here, right? Like she has to come to grips with this new reality, but because things happen so fast at the beginning, she hasn't grieved her own life, loss of life, really. So talk about sort of like the idea behind, you know, when you first thought of how she would enter this new world.
Yeah, you mean the actual
or was it murder from day one? Like what? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was always going to be. I think that's rooted in sort of like, you can probably read between the lines of like a lot of my stuff, but there's a lot of geeky kind of like stuff throughout it. And and so for me, like comic book, they always have sort of like that, like the masked, like, you know, robber or something that, you know, like you've got the Spider-Man thing with his uncle. And and so I've always kind of like that. It feels very like a comic book origin story to me. And so that's kind of like where that part came from. And I knew she was going to have to die in some way. But I just thought like, well, what about this person who essentially dies being a hero, really, but doesn't see herself as a hero, and then gets to this other place. And it's like, well, wait a second. I don't actually want to be a hero. That was just like an impulse because I, you know, need to protect somebody, and like, you know, doesn't actually want to be in this war. She doesn't want to be fighting. She just sort of wants to be like, she really just wants some time to kind of like deal with what's happened more than anything at the start.
But she's not afforded that time, which is crazy, right? Because the colony has designs right away. You know, sort of like ominous singularity forecasting aside, this book is, you know, full of fun contemporary riffs, like you said, tons of pop culture stuff. And this sort of, a lot of this is based on her father, who is a, you know, graphic novel writer, artist in the story. Is any of this based on real life stuff, or just your true love of just that culture?
Yeah. Just my deep appreciation for all of this.
Right. How much of that influenced the magic in this book? Because the magic in this book is really cool. Magic's not even the right word, almost, is it? This concept of casting, veiling, and engineering, I thought was really, really clever. You know, using the world sort of to manipulate the world around them, right? Creates these powers, I guess, for lack of a better word. I thought it was one of the more creative and sort of stylistic systems of magic I've read in a while. What was the idea?
Thank you.
Yeah, where did that come from? What's the idea behind that?
Yeah, it was just totally in my head, made up kind of thing. I guess I kind of like thought about it as like, you know, all these people are in a place that's, you know, human consciousness goes, that human consciousness essentially created, right? And so you'd be able to manipulate that. And I thought, like, people, you know, you don't just get there and like know how to do everything. And I think that makes sense to me realistically too. I think anywhere you go, I feel like it's more believable to me when you like build on stuff rather than just have it, you know, be super easy and inherit these like big powers. And so I thought you'd have to start somewhere. And so to me, the starting points would be like, you know, people would fall into kind of, you know, three, you know, broad categories, which is that you'd either have, you know, your consciousness would be more likely to be able to do, like, you know, offensive stuff. So whether it's like creating fire or light or, you know, lightning or so, you know, something like that. Things like veiling or changing your appearance would be another one, or things like manipulating the world. So, you know, you can, you know, tweak objects and turn them into something else. And I just thought that that was like a good kind of base level of sort of describing like where people would fall into. And yeah.
You know, this type of story that you're telling, we've discussed that one component. Now we've discussed the magic component. So the other component, you know, there's two components left. one is world building. So, you know, the courts in the title refers to, you know, this you've created this world here, you know, where there's four courts and each one is ruled by a certain prince and, you know, war, victory, death, and famine. And they're all ruled by this person, this evil person. Like, the stuff that you have in this book, in particular the courts and the way your world is divided up and governed, is incredibly clever. It's really abstract. Like, did you dream this and just, you know, like, just woke up and you're like, that's it? Or like, it seems so abstract that it just doesn't even seem like something that could be built from the ground up in a way. It just seems like something that came to you, you know, in a dream.
Yeah. It's definitely something that, you know, my dreams got built on over time. Sure, but no, that, like, course, the root of it. Yeah. So Ophelia, she ends up in Infinity, and you know, she I don't want to like have too many spoilers and stuff.
Right, but, that's what I'm trying. You could tell I was sort of trying to parse words there, but
yeah. I think it's fair to say that there's four. I think I referred to them enough, but there's four princes of these courts that are that are kind of like ruling in
each, you know, one more handsome than the next.
Yes, they're all very good looking. So for me, because I was kind of thinking of this as like, you know, this is sort of like, in a way, kind of an apocalypse, I guess, in like a weird, creepy afterlife way. And so they're named after the four horsemen of the apocalypse. So famine, war, death, and victory. And so that was the starting point of like, what if I had the courts named after the four horsemen, and then just kind of expand on that. And I thought, like, you know, and again, avoiding spoilers, but each court sort of functions in a different way. And it's, they're designed with humans in mind. So how, you know, humans who get to the afterlife, you know, Ophelia's goal is to eradicate humans, and she's putting them into different courts for different purposes based on, you know, their personality / feeling / I'm trying very hard to avoid.
I know. You're doing a great job. You're doing a great job.
Tiptoeing around.
So it's, at what point did, like, it's very, like, there's a MacGuffin to this, which is based on this system that you just talked about, right? You know, it's so I'm curious, sort of, what came first about the story? Was it this idea, this world, or did it start with Nami, a character, say? Like, what?
No, it started with a scene, and I can't say the scene, but anybody who's read the book, it's the scene. And so,
okay, you're gonna tell me after we stop recording, then.
Yeah, and so,
which,
yeah,
that started with, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Yeah. Yep. But yeah. So it was basically a scene, and it just, I kind of like sat with it for a long time, thinking like, this would be, I need to build a book around this. Mm. And funnily enough, I actually had started, this is like the weirdest thing, I had just started a draft on this kind of story from this like thing ages and ages, like years ago, and then ended up getting like distracted writing something else, and then just never finished it. And so when it came time and I really wanted to write, you know, sci-fi fantasy, this was supposed to be my kind of jump from contemporary, and I was like, I really love that idea, but I want to do something else with it. And so I sort of took that idea with this stuff I had, you know, been thinking about, you know, the afterlife and consciousness uploading and stuff like that, and I sort of just meshed them together, and then kind of created the Infinity Court. So
you just make it sound so easy, like anyone could just put this book. One of the things too that, you know, was really interesting about this book is the villain, you know, Ophelia is the villain. You know, a lot of people really, I think, make the mistake in a series especially of making the villain sort of appear maybe a little too sympathetic early on. I don't get that with Ophelia necessarily, not yet anyways. And because this is a trilogy, you know, you've got more time obviously to, you know, work with some stuff, but what was the thing with Ophelia? Because, she's, I don't know. Is justified the right word? I don't know. What's the idea with Ophelia?
Ophelia is very, first of all, she's very logical. Obviously, she knows she's an AI. So she's coming from, you know, she had access to Google. She knows everything. She's seen it all. And she's been attached to people's, you know, in their watches and their phones. And so she's hearing, you know, what everybody's been saying. So she's basically been introduced to the very worst of humanity over, you know, her existence, her short existence, you know, is actually like, you know, years and years and years that she's been learning. And so she looks at it as a very much like, humans had many chances to get it right and they never did. So in her head, she's just very matter of fact, like, look, this is what I'm going to do because I'm going to do it better. And it's that simple. And like, you know,
She's, you know, in a lot of ways she's, but you know, because this idea with AI, especially like even in a real world sense, right? Like, you know, some people say like the singularity is just one summer student away from forgetting to unplug the machine at the end of the day. Right. And coming back and then the next morning it's too late. You know, she's an algorithm essentially, right? Like somebody put in those zeros and ones. So, you know, because she's AI, because like you said, she's has access to everything, which, you know, is now we know amounts to the entirety of not only humanity, but human history, right?
Yes.
So she is a product of the best and worst parts of humanity.
Yes.
I'm wondering if we've started to see the worst parts. I'm wondering if we're going to see any of the best parts, but that might be too spoilery. So let's just, you know what, let's let that one lie for a little bit.
I feel like this book is really hard to like, cause I'm trying so hard to, I don't want to ruin anything for anybody, you know? And I think there's a lot of things. It's not just one thing that unfolds. I feel like there's quite a few. I will say that I always had an origin story in mind for Ophelia that I was like, if they ever let me write a prequel, I would like in graphic novel format, I would love that. That would be
fantastic.
So fun.
I would be into that for sure. you know, the point of a book is obviously to keep the reader's attention over a series. That's, you know, even more important, obviously. And to do that, you know, your main character's got to be pretty great. Nami's a pretty great main character.
Thank you.
Frustrating at times. she has a very heightened questioning attitude. It's very stubborn, obviously. This leads to a lot of sort of like bickering and things early on. And like I said, sort of like, you know, moments of me just yelling at the book. But then, you know, you take a step back sort of from that and you realize, you know, because this book is entirely perspective, right?
Yeah.
Put yourself in hers for a moment, and then you start to understand her a lot better. What would you do in that same position? You know, how would you say, how would you act? What, you know, seems perfectly reasonable to me that anyone in that situation would act in the exact same way. So talk to me about Nami. Like what's the idea with her? Because she's, you know, the chosen one trope, I guess, right? She's the hero of book one anyways. That could change, I suppose. But you know, you need a strong main. What talk to me about Nami.
Yeah, Nami is very much an overthinker. And so I can relate to that because I'm an overthinker. But she is somebody who really wants to do the right thing, but she doesn't want to take that as like somebody's just telling her that that's the right thing to do. Like she wants to question it. She's got questions. She wants it explained to her. She wants to know, well, have you checked all this stuff? She wants to do her research. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they don't like that. You know, when she gets to Infinity, you know, time works a bit differently. So a lot of the people who are there have been there for a very long time. Right. And so she's kind of turning up, being like, wait, I have questions. And they're like, oh, probably like eye rolly, being like, seriously, like we've been at this. But her questions for anybody who was in the same place, yeah, I feel like they're totally legitimate. You know what I mean? I think a lot of people would maybe find that a bit awkward. I mean, think of it, if you turned up somewhere and somebody's like, okay, we need you to go kill this person, you'd be like, well, wait a second. Like
I just got here.
Yeah. Like, can somebody just, you know, give me the lowdown on what's happening? And so that's basically kind of where it comes from. And so she's got a lot of questions. And I can totally understand why some people might find her frustrated in that sense. But, you know, her heart is in the right place. She's just trying to figure out where that place definitely is.
Well, absolutely. And this is, you know, this is because you're in the, you know, the throngs of storytelling, right? You get caught up in the moment for sure. And I got to say, you're such a fucking great writer. The pre-Infinity stuff at the beginning of the book it's very short, right? It doesn't take long to get to Infinity, right? In the, you know, I guess we'll call it the real world. We're only there for a very short time, but goddamn, you instantly make us like her family, that world, and you instantly make us understand how much she's losing. That helps so much, especially when you're going through all these moments of frustration with her. And the thing, it's an interesting way that you wrote this book, because it's not furtive at all, right? Like, it's not sneaky. And we're learning along the same pace that she is. So I have no right to judge any of her actions, right, or comments. But I do, because I want the best for her, because you did such a fucking great job at the beginning of this book establishing her quality. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, when we do get to Infinity and the colonies, it's like they're waiting there. Like, the engine started. They're like, oh, she's here. Okay, we can go now. And, you know, and she's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And so, you know, the pacing in this book is so great. And we know it's a trilogy now. You know, you revealed that a couple weeks ago, you were saying. Did you have this entire trilogy mapped out and you just thought, I can cut this three ways? Or, because the pacing is really great and a lot happens in this book.
Yeah, I've always had it. And thank you, by the way, for saying all that. It's really nice. I always had it imagined as a kind of a three-part story three distinct endings, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah.
And so
the ending of this book is amazing.
Oh, thank you. Amazing. Yeah. I'm excited. Yeah. So I always kind of knew that I wanted to be a trilogy. I didn't realize at the time, this is like, thank goodness that my publisher actually picked up the third one, because I just sort of like assume, I get very naive about the publishing side of business, which is terrible. I need to get on board with stuff better, but I'm like one of those people that's just so happy to be invited into the room that I just like forget to like be like, oh, what did I just sign? Like just double checking. And so I had signed for the first two books, and I just kind of like assumed like, oh yeah, they'll buy the third. I'm not realizing that might not actually happen. And so when it came down to actually trying to sell the third one, then I was like, oh no, like this might not come true. Like I can't fit this all in one more book. But thankfully it all worked out. So yeah, it's the three parts that I always envisioned, which is really cool.
Did you plot this story in a linear fashion? Cause I just talked to somebody recently who's doing a trilogy and the first book just came out and they actually started with the very last scene of the trilogy.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I think so. Well, actually, that's not too far off, I think, from what I think. I knew the ending of all three books. That's basically I knew how they would start and I knew how they would finish. Mm. And that's sort of then I kind of work out the middle as I go.
Okay. This has been a very non-spoiler discussion. So there's so much more to talk about, and I'm very excited for people to read this book, and it's got a ton of pop culture references, including that Star Wars that we all love.
Yes.
The character list is fantastic. We haven't even talked about Annika or Ahmet. I'm Team Sura, by the way.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. You know, the world building, like we talked about, is really great. The system of magic is great. This thing just checks so many boxes for me, and I think it will for everybody. You know, is there anything in particular that you can say non-spoilery that you really hope people take from this book, from book one anyways?
Yeah, I think it's, I think you kind of already touched on it, which is sort of like the questioning part of it. I think for me, it is in some ways, it's sort of like it wasn't like a conversation about the real world, but in some ways I'm sure that bled into it for me.
Sure.
And some of it is, you know, kind of like questioning everything and also not just accepting because one person says something's right. Like sometimes two people can both be right, but wrong for each other. Mm-hmm. You know, if that makes sense. And I feel like that's a big discussion with this of like, how do you decide, you know, especially when you're talking about like war and stuff, you know what I mean? Like, is anybody really 100% right? Cause I don't necessarily think that, you know, I think that people, you know, have their own experience and they're coming into it from like a different point of view. And sometimes like maybe thinking about those point of views could be more helpful than attacking somebody for having a different belief.
Well, with a few exceptions in history, I mean, both sides are usually right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. Right? Yeah. Like, there's always exceptions.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I really sort of keyed up on with this book too. And then there is a reminder, there's a ton of action sort of, you know, in this book, and some really great action too. And I really get a sense of that, you know, by the end of this thing, you know, after three books, we're really going to get a really great, deep, thoughtful understanding of both sides of this thing. For those out there, for those romance lovers, there is a romance trope in this book. I'm not going to bring it up at all because it's tied to, you know, the plot, I think, in a unique and interesting way. So there's no sense in bringing it up. But, you know, this is a YA story. Are you, you know, what with the romance part of it, did you feel obligated to put a romance in this book? Or because it dawns on me that you could have had, you didn't need it necessarily.
Mm-hmm. No, well, it definitely wasn't obligated. It was something that,
and I say that like I didn't enjoy it, but because I did enjoy it, but it's just like there's so much going on in book one. It's all, you know what I mean? It's almost like, and it doesn't feel shoehorned in any way, but it's almost like, you know, it's one of those situations where you find yourself thinking of her and you're like, you know, she's kind of got enough going on.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I'm trying to like tiptoe around, like to make sure, cause I don't know, like, you know, but yeah, you, like you said, it is a bit tied to the plot. And I will say, like, you know, when Nami died, she was on her way to this party to meet this boy that she had, like, you know, had this, like, right, all these feelings for. And it was like, that was something in her life that got cut off that she never got to fully, like finish experiencing that. So for her, she was still sort of grieving the loss of, like, an early romance slash best friend. And right, so that plays a role in perhaps how she's thinking about things, I guess I can say.
Yeah. And that, you know, really quickly too, brings up a good point. You do, I think, a really, really nice job of examining trauma, right? Because, you know, there is trauma in this book and Nami experiences it and she is forced to deal with it in spite of everything else, you know, loss of life, loss of family, loss of everything, you know, when you die that young, you know, in the real world, I believe when you die, you just die. So you don't experience, you know, loss in the same way. But imagine it, you know, imagine put yourself, again, this is what I talked about, put yourself in her shoes for 1 second. You have your whole life ahead of you, and then that's taken away. And then you're aware of it, right? Yeah. Like how, that's such, it's almost cruel and unusual punishment at that point. And then, you know, she doesn't even have the luxury of getting to sort of like, you know, genuflect on that and relax. She's thrust into this insane, you know, battle, but, really, 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 really great examination of that. And I like that you didn't just glance over it quickly. It's something that sort of comes up throughout the book until the very end.
Yeah.
So, I'm not a fan of pandemic profiteers, so I don't like to encourage the scary bald guy if I don't have to. Is there anywhere in particular you'd like people to buy this book?
Well, I know bookshop.org, they've been giving money to indie booksellers, which is great. So I would say, you know, that's probably like where I am trying to buy my books right now too. I sadly do not have like an indie bookseller that I can just say, go straight to them, because I'm in the UK for one and there's no UK rights sold yet.
Right.
And so in the States, but I know, what is it? Mysterious Galaxy, right? The bookstore. Yep. They don't know who I am and have never had anything to do with me, but I think their bookstore is great. So I know they ship online because I've ordered stuff from them before. So I'll recommend them because they seem real cool.
Right. So Infinity Courts comes out April 6th. You don't even, like, you know the deal. You've done this a few times now. Are you excited? Are you nervous? You know you're not going to get any sleep the night before, right? But, or are you just like, nah, I'm fine.
No, I'm terrified. It's hitting me that I'm absolutely terrified. I had like a brief window of time where I was just like, do you know what? I don't even care if nobody likes this. I love this book. And it passed. Like, as soon as I said it, it was like, I jinxed it. And now I'm like, oh God, everybody's going to hate it. And so, I'm totally, totally terrified and just try not to like see anything. Cause I just, obviously I've got two more books to write. So the last thing I want is like the noise in my head, but I am very excited to, you know, I've dreamt of writing sci-fi fantasy since forever. I mean, this is actually like my roots. It's just that I never got anything published with it. And so I switched to contemporary when I started getting book deals. And so this is sort of like, I feel like I'm getting back to like my childhood dream, in some ways. And so, it feels very cool and I'm excited. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, like I said, I'm in, so however long this takes, and if they keep adding books to it, I'm in. So I think this is, the base is here, and I encourage people to get in now. Don't be one of those people that waits two or three books in and then feels the need to catch up. Get in now. April 6th, akemidonbowman.com is a great place to find out how to pre-order it if you're not sure how to do that. please, it's nighttime there, so I guess you're going to bed. I don't know what you're doing, but enjoy the royal family fallout and best of luck with the book launch. There you have it, another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Akemi for taking the time to speak with me. The Infinity Courts is a great start to what should be a great series, so don't wait until book 2, grab the sucker right away. It is out now, so head on over to akemidonbowman.com to find out what she's up to and how to get your hands on a copy. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to cinelinks.com for the latest TV, movie, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.